Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 170th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at soccernewsday.com. And don't forget to listen to this program on mtrradio.com. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities as I can. Before we get with the show here, I want to pass along my condolences to Yahoo Sports writer and all-around wonderful guy in Martin Rogers. Him and his wife, Carol, unfortunately, their baby girl passed away. Her untimely death. I just want to send my condolences to Martin and, of course, to his wife, Carol, as well. Very sorry to hear about what happened. It was a baby girl. Her name was Sophia. And I just want to say once again to both Carol and Martin Rogers, sending my condolences to them. Once again, so sorry for your loss, and even though it wasn't that long she lived still, it's a sad day, and once again, hopes, thoughts, and prayers are with Carol and Martin Rogers on this terrible tragedy, of course. But once again, to Carol and Martin Rogers, I just want to send my condolences to them for their loss, and hopefully... they can try again. Hopefully they will. But once again, just want to send my condolences to both Carol and Martin Rogers for their loss. So sorry for what happened. And now, as we move forward here on the show, there's been some recent talk about what's been going on with these positions, who earns what, who advances to the CONCACAF Champions League starting in the 2014-15 tournament. And it's been a big topic, I guess. It's been a very big topic in recent years because some people feel that certain positions or certain ways of earning a trip to the CONCACAF Champions League should be reshuffled or, scrambled. Something, one tournament should not have it, or no, you leave it at that tournament, and then you come over and you say, well, maybe this tournament they don't get it, and you give it to someone else, and all these sort of things. And it's really interesting when you have these stories that come out of the blue, these rumors that are, I feel rumors in the game of football, soccer, they're very, very rampant in this sport. And sometimes, you got to take them with a grain of salt. And sometimes you have to wonder, where is the truth? Where is these things that pop up and say, well, this Open Cup is not going to get it anymore. They're going to take it away. Oh, now we're going to take it away from the Supporter Shield winner. Oh, now we're going to take it away from the MLS Cup runner-up winner. We don't know what's going on here, but the truth is this, is that the U.S. Open Cup has not lost their CONCACAF Champions League spot for the champion of our domestic cup competition. And that's a positive right there, because I would hate, I would really, really hate to see the CONCACAF Champions League spot, the one of four spots, being taken away for winning our domestic cup competition, because it's really important and it gives importance to the Open Cup. Now, there's been other reports that have been thrown out there. Well, maybe the runner-up in the MLS Cup final will also have that spot removed. And who would you give it to? Well, apparently, as I'm understanding it, from this article, or maybe from Brian Strauss, but it's not clear cut at the moment, but it could be either second place in the Supporters' Shield race, or they would give it to the winner of the Western Conference. So you have one East and one West. And the truth is this. I believe that is probably the best way to go. If you are going to reshuffle who earns a trip to the CONCACAF Champions League next August, I think that's probably even better, because it is a long, grueling season. And once again, it's a 34, 35, 36 week, you know, 6-7 month season. And if you are going to win a spot in the CONCACAF Champions League, from one from the East and one from the West, then by golly, I think that's the best way to go. Because that would make more sense. The winner of MLS Cup should be the only one to go in the CONCACAF Champions League. And for that, I think that's a better idea. Because let's just say, for the heck of it, the winner of the Supporters' Shield also wins MLS Cup. So then what you would do is the runner-up would automatically go ahead, because you already have one team going in with a double championship. And you know what? I think that's a better idea. Obviously, if you follow Twitter, Josh Hakala's tweets, of course, the U.S. Open Cup account, right away, the story's been refuted. It originally came out from Goal.com that it would be the Open Cup losing their CCL spot. Of course, that story's been taken down. And while you try not to refute or claim certain sites are bogus, which I will not do, but my feeling is that we need better sources before we start writing on what is real and what is fake. And the truth of the matter is that unless it's a parody website for soccer, then it's okay to write whatever you want. Of course, there's always, you know, the former MLS Rumors website. And if I feel that it's a rumor that deserves to be thrown out there, it's a rumor, whether it's real or not. You could just throw it out there. If it's a parody website on MLS, then yeah, I say throw it out there and put it there and let the people talk. But if you want your website to be legitimate when you're talking about MLS and American soccer, then you know what? You've got to make sure that none of that baloney gets thrown into a reputable website, because if you make a mistake, don't know how big it could be, but it could cost someone their job or at least their credibility. You know, Grant Wall from Sports Illustrated, he's a very, very good writer. I enjoy what I see from Grant. Of course, he puts stuff out there that are legitimate because he wants to be known, and he is known as a legitimate writer for soccer in this country, whether it's coming from Europe or from the U.S. And, you know, I follow him on Twitter, and he admitted that he got some bad information from a reliable source up in Montreal about a player who I believe was Alessandro Nesta, who says he's going to retire and become the next head coach for the Impact, and apparently that wasn't true. And, you know, he apologized for it. And you know what? That shows you that Grant Wall is very respectable, because as good as he is, and to me he's one of the best writers covering the sport for Sports Illustrated and, of course, now at Fox Sports for their Fox Soccer Daily Show. Grant Wall, in my book, deserves a pass for the one accidental piece of information that he wrote. He manned up, he owned it, and that's fine. But you know what? For someone like Grant Wall, that this happened to him maybe like once in a blue moon, you know what I say? He deserves a pass, because he's been through this, and most of the time, probably, you know, this will never, ever happen again. But the point is that when we are writing stories and when we're writing information and we're writing to let you guys know about what's going on, that we need to make sure that no bad information is out there. Of course, just recently, the New York Cosmos, they won the NASL Soccer Bowl, the second division championship, be it only half a season played, or shall we say just that fall season. Apparently, rumors came out stating that CONCACAF was willing to allow the New York Cosmos, who are a second division team, the ability and the opportunity to play in this upcoming CONCACAF Champions League. And, of course, that was quickly refuted by CONCACAF and U.S. Soccer. But let me just say this, whether it be the Cosmos, the Strikers, the Rowdies, Minnesota United, the Scorpions, the Railhawks, and any other expansion side coming into the NASL, it would be an uproar if any second division side, unless they win the Open Cup, gets an opportunity to play in the CONCACAF Champions League. Because I can tell you for a fact, if you saw a football championship league team in England qualify for the UEFA Champions League, I bet you England, it'd be such an uproar. Because why does a second division league deserve a CCL side unless it is an Open Cup championship? And that's the truth. That's the only way that I will accept a second division team going into the CONCACAF Champions League outside of the three positions that were allowed to an MLS team. And that is the truth. That's the only way. You don't just hand spots like they're a golden ticket. You don't just hand spots on a whim. You win the Open Cup if you're an NASL side or a USL Pro side, you go. Other than that, you don't deserve it. You get your one shot, and your one shot only. And that's it. So let's just be honest with ourselves here. The only way a lower division side is going to be allowed to go in is if they win the Open Cup, and that's it. That is it. Nice try, but no way that's going to happen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I got a very good show for you tonight. We're going to review the MLS Cup playoffs again. Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals first leg. We're going to have on Denzel Esslinger on the RSL 4-2 win against Portland Timbers at Rio Tinto Stadium in the first leg. And then we're going to have in between, of course, we'll have John Jagu on talking about Mexico's the preview their upcoming playoffs and World Cup qualifying. Of course, we'll have on Mr. Neil Morris of The Independent in the NESL segment, regular time NESL segment, as we discuss the New York Cosmos defeating the Atlanta Silverbacks at Silverbacks Park down in Atlanta. Of course, Eastern Conference first leg review. We're going to have Mike Kuhn on a little bit later. But joining me first, of course, is someone down in Houston who's happy. I know he's a little, he has to understand that I was a little bit grumpy after what his team did to mine. But you know what? It's my good friend Warren Jones. And Warren, it's a first leg draw. And I understand you brought your pillow and blanket because it wasn't what you expected.
Well, let's be fair. The game itself, I think even the Kansas City fans would probably have to agree, it was pretty dire outing. But, you know, that's unfortunately as a result of a pretty hectic schedule. I mean, the Dynamo themselves had three games in a week. I'm not real sure what genius at MLS set the schedule this season, but this is as bad as I've.
You know
I think
his name. You
been.
Just won't say it, Warren. You know his Warren. You know his name. You just won't say it.
He whose name I will not speak. But no, you know, I mean, to jam the playoffs into, you know, 3 and 4, you know, 2 and 3 day breaks, and then get to an international break and have to wait 9 or 10 days to play a second leg. That's just silly. They know these international schedules in advance. I understand in some cases you have stadium issues and scheduling issues, but you know, it's not necessarily the case with the team like the Dynamo or say like in LA, but you know, this is. I don't normally complain about scheduling in the playoffs because you, in seasons past, it seemed like a natural transition into the postseason. But for whatever reason, this season just seems to be really, really cumbersome, and not just on the field, but I mean for viewers as well. I mean, the TV schedules seem just a little more crazier this year than usual, but I don't know. I think it's getting back to the game. I think both teams did as well as they could under the conditions. You know, but I think they were both tired. I think it showed. I didn't see any real standout performances on either side. But you know, what do you expect when you play so many games back to back with a little rest? You know, the Dynamo did score an offside goal early, but which it was offside. I'm not complaining about that. That was the proper mm-hmm. call. But beyond that, there wasn't a whole lot to do to watch in the game. It just wasn't. I was trying to watch the. I actually found myself watching Sporting KC's players, seeing if they were really, they appeared to be dragging in the latter part of the game a little more than the Dynamo. I think the Dynamo actually showed some signs of life towards the end, at least in the last 15 or 20 minutes. It looked like the KC players were really running out of gas. I'm not so sure if that match didn't run another 10 minutes, we may have nicked a goal to go up, but. We held serve. That's basically what happened. So we go back to Kansas City. Tough place to play. It's a big ask to try to win there, but you know, we've got the momentum of winning in New York on at y'all's park, and who knows? Mm-hmm. We are a postseason team. We're in. Regardless of how we played or how poorly we may have played towards the end of the season this year, you know, Dominic Kinnear somehow manages to put it into that extra gear when the postseason comes around, and by hook or by crook, you know, we've managed to make it this far, and I'm certainly not complaining,
Yes, you are.
But they've got their work cut out for them. we will have our work cut out for us to beat Kansas City on their home pitch. But we, you know, in we play. I think we play fairly well in Kansas City. I don't think we, like a lot of other clubs, I don't think we go there and necessarily get dominated. We've had our we've laid an egg or two there also, but by the same token, I think we fare as well, or we are as competitive against Kansas City on their home field as much as anyone, or at least that I've seen.
Right.
KC supporters who see them play game in and game out may disagree with that, but they may have another team that that may be a little more of a bogey team for them. But I'm just going based on our performances. I think the Dynamo don't really have anything to fear when they go to Kansas City. And I expect them to play well. The only ding that will, you know, we've kind of got our fingers and toes crossed is Oscar Boniet Garcia got called up for international break. So we will be holding our collective breaths to make sure that he doesn't get hurt or injured, or we'll have enough leg in him to play the next round as well. But I think he'll be he's fit, he's in great shape, and he's up for it. So I expect, short of an injury, that he'll be ready to play come the second round. And we really kind of lucked out as far as call-ups from the U.S. national team. We did. Tally Hall and Brad Davis did not get called up, which was kind of a fear of ours. So they'll be able to train with the team and prepare and hopefully just take a few days off and just shake the kinks out, get some rest, get fit, and come back ready to play.
Absolutely, but I have to say though, it looks like I think Dom probably gave the whole week off this week after. You know, trudging along, or maybe Dom and Vermees are like looking at each other at halftime in the tunnel, saying, "You know what? How about this? No reckless challenges from our guys, and no reckless challenges for your guys. Okay, fine. You rarely see a game as tiring as it was to watch this game in the second half. Obviously, no goals, but no bookings. So, I mean, that's at least probably a handshake agreement after the first leg."
Yeah, there could have been a gentleman's agreement there, but I don't know how they transfer that to the players, it was really just kind of a bizarre game to watch. Sometimes football is a beautiful game, and sometimes the Dynamo are partakers in creating a beautiful game, but this was not one of either. This isn't going to go on the highlight reel for either team, but again, the thing that I think I found kind of interesting is, you know, it's no secret that BBVA Compass Stadium has a little smaller patch than some of the other grounds around the league. So it just makes it even worse that it looks so slow when you're playing on a small field. But the team just looked tired. I think the New York game really – I can't speak to why Kansas City looked as down as they did or as tired as they did. I just know – between the travel and between the emotional roller coaster of the New York series, I really expected a letdown. And to be perfectly honest, I have to actually say that I'm happy to come away from this game with a point, because as battered and beaten as with Corey Ash out at left back due to suspension. This could have gone the other way very, very easily. Yeah. And I do want to say something, just kind of going back to the New York series too. The one player that deserves the most credit on the Dynamo squad right now is Tally Hall, because I think you would probably agree. He just played phenomenal in the New York series. And he's carried that into this series, and I don't think we'd be where we are. In fact, I'm quite sure that we would have gotten bumped out of the New York series had he not stepped it up and played as well as he did. And he's managed somehow to get hot. I mean, he just flat pulled a couple of goals out of the back of the net against New York.
Oh, absolutely. Let's be honest here.
He robbed Thierry Henry a couple of times, and I think Henry was even just scratching his head. And Cahill, right.
I know.
And you know, whatever they threw at him, he managed to turn away. And hopefully with this break, he'll manage to stay on form. I think he will, because he's just a consistent keeper. One thing when you watch Tally Hall play week in and week out, and this is what I'm really hopeful for his long-term future with not only the club, but hopefully getting some national team recognition, is he's just gotten mm-hmm. better and better every year. He's gotten faster every year. He's quicker. He's just, when you watch him week in and week out, he's improved, not by leaps and bounds, because he was very good when he got here, but he's just, his positioning, his strength when he comes out on crosses, just all of the little intricacies that go into playing goal. He's managed to work on every single one of those, and every element he's just ratcheted up a little bit each season. And that's really, not a lot of teams in this league can look at their keeper and go, not only am I happy with our keeper, but I hope he stays here for a long time. He's an outstanding keeper. And he deserves a lot of credit. He is one of the reasons, if not the reason, that the Dynamo are where they are today in the playoffs.
Right. I agree. But I have to say, though, I mean, you know, he spills that ball that allowed Bradley Wright Phillips to convert. So you could. I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you because, you know, if he doesn't cough up that one and you're not down 3-2 on aggregate and 1-0 in the game, you know, you can definitely say, boy, you can definitely say, you know, he said, boys, you know, that one's on me. I'm climbing my back. Yep. I'm gonna prevent this team from getting a second, and that's what he did.
Yeah, and I can, you know, for as long as he's now been in the league, I mean, and he's been in for a couple of seasons now, and so he's logged quite a few minutes. I can count on one hand how many times he's spilled a ball like that, not to mention even, you know, going so far as costing the team a goal. And every keeper has that. You know, you try to hope that it doesn't happen on the big stage in the playoffs or in a cup match or something like that. But Tally Hall, it sounds funny, but when you support a club like you support Red Bull, and you have certain players who have almost earned the right to make those mistakes. you got to look at a play like that and say, okay, you know, Tally Hall, you know, we wouldn't be here without all of the phenomenal games he's had this season. So, you know, I would wish that he didn't just hand Bradley Wright Phillips a goal in a critical match, but he came back, he defended well, he made up for it numerous times, and you look at that, and you go, that's a professional. You just pick it, especially at this time of the season, you know, you have to pick yourself back up and move forward. You can't look backwards, and that's exactly what he did. I said, it was unfortunately a national audience got to see him make probably the biggest mistake he's made since he's been in a Dynamo uniform, but which may not have boded well for people who look at players in MLS and see them or see them advancing to the national team. I mean, they may look back at that and go, well, that's the guy that spilled the ball against New York, so I don't know if he's good enough to play for the national team.
Yeah, but, definitely. You know, all right, Warren, listen, I'll talk to you later. I got to move on, but I'll talk to you after the second leg, okay?
All right, and hopefully we'll be in the final.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And that's Warren Jones, everybody. And of course, the Houston Dynamo going to take a long break before the second leg over at Sporting Park in Kansas City. Joining me on the other side of that draw is, of course, my good friend Mike Kuhn at Down the Byline. Kuhn, I know you'll probably take that result, even though it probably wasn't a stellar match Sporting KC-wise, but still, though, I'd like to think that you'll probably take it.
I'll take it. I mean, it's not the perfect result for us, obviously, but, I mean, we'll take the point on the road, or the result on the road. I mean, considering what happened last year on the road when we played Houston, I think I'd be much happier. I think I'll be much happier in this position going home than going home down 2-0.
You know, I have to say, though, and I guess now I know how you felt every time you play Houston, whether it be at BBVA Compass Stadium or at home at Sporting Park, is that this Dynamo team is very stingy, very, very tough, and they just find a way to grind it out. Maybe a little bit of negative football, but at least I can respect what they try to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, funny enough, I saw a really good quote from Bobby Boswell after the game, and he's like, he made mention to, like, the first time he met up against them in the playoffs a couple of years ago, he had mentioned how we played a more possession style attack, and they basically knocked us on our butts. And what he was saying was, we took that, and now we're starting to dish it out to them because of how that result went against us a couple years ago, basically. So, I mean, you can see the evolution of how our series with Houston has gone over the years, just from that quote, basically. It just shows how the dynamics of the way not only Houston plays against us, but how we play against Houston. We changed our entire mindset when it comes to playing the Dynamo, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, I was just telling Warren Jones down in Houston, you know, maybe Dom and Vermees probably had like a gentleman's agreement when they got into the tunnel at halftime. Like, okay, you know, we're all tired out here. You know, we both went to extra time in the second leg against our last opponents. How about this? No reckless challenges from us, no reckless challenges from you, and we'll be fine because there's like no one got booked at all in this game.
No one got booked, although I think part of that, if they had a conversation, I assume Stott was in on it too. There were a couple instances for both sides that I felt that Stott should have pulled out a card. So, I mean, if Burmese and Kinnear had a conversation, then Stott was definitely in on it.
He probably was. Are you telling me that, you know, Stott did not deal? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, but no, I mean, the result in Houston, if you've watched any KC-Houston game, basically since Kansas City won back in 2011, beat Houston 3-0 at Sporting Park. And since then, every game since then has just been, for lack of a better term, a knockdown, drag-out brawl more than a soccer game. I mean, I was looking at the numbers, and it was like we played them 10 times in the 2 years, a little over 2 years since that 3-0 game. And there have been only two results that have been decided by more than a goal. Unfortunately, they were both playoff games for Houston. But, I mean, any game that we play against Houston now, it's just incredibly tight, and it's very hard fought. It's not going to change in Kansas City. I expect the exact same thing from both teams.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you. I think there's going to be another knock them out, drag them out fight over at Sporting Park. Want to ask you a question here. Apparently through Twitter and other reports, Aurelien Collin, I'm assuming this is his last season on his contract with MLS. Apparently, there are other clubs in the league that are interested in bringing him over, but he says he wants to go back to Europe. Have you heard those exact reports too?
I have. The article, it was an interview he did with a French site, and basically what it was he has one more year on his current deal. At least that's the way he put it in the article, and that he has that New York and L.A. are both interested in him, but he's more interested in heading back to Europe. It's funny because that ended up getting posted on Twitter, and Colin responded I believe it was Sean Francis, and said, "Bad translation, bro." And after I saw that, I kind of waved it off, but what I did is I sent the you saw the conversation on Twitter after that. I sent it over to a friend of mine, and he sent it to a kids in France, and his buddy translated it, and he's like, if it's a mistranslation, then it's a misquote in the first place, because that's what the translation was from French to English. So if it was a mistranslation, then it was a misquote to begin with in the article.
Okay.
But,
so we'll see what happens.
He's kind of trying to CYA in that situation, cover his ass.
Yeah.
Because of the comments he made, but I wouldn't be surprised if a team in Europe was going to come in. I mean, I thought that for a little while with Colin. I mean, being a French citizen, he has that he has an easier path to get in to leagues than some of the American players who have to go through the visa process. You know what I mean?
Right. Of course.
So I mean,
of course,
he has
understand that completely.
Yeah, so he has that in his favor, and I think I've railed to you for a couple of years now about KC's lack of center back depth. I finally feel that we could lose Colin, be okay. We wouldn't lose as much as we would lose in years past because Ike Opara has done very well for us. I mean, with Colin's suspensions and Beisler's national team call-ups, Opara's gotten a number of games for us this year, and he hasn't missed a beat. In fact, if I remember right, we actually are allowing less goals per game when Opara starts compared to when Beisler and Colin start together.
Right. No, I agree with you. I mean, you know, you felt that Ike Opara wasn't going to get any more time with San Jose due to the injuries and everything, but the point is that if Opara's done well for Kansas City and, you know, you're not leaking in as many goals like you were before, then obviously, you know, you don't have to worry about your center back depth or anything. Is there anyone in Kansas City right now in the youth academies that could make the move up in as a center back to join with Opara?
Earlier this year we signed Eric Palmer Brown of the U-17 national team. U-17, U-18, but he's only 16 right now. I mean, he can play center back, but I wouldn't expect him to be contributing with Opara or Beisler for at least another year or two, and that would only be sparingly. But the thing is, Beisler's locked up for another couple years on top of Colin, although depending on how his World Cup goes, I expect bids to come in for him the same I expect them to come in for Zuzi next summer. But I don't expect I don't expect either one of them to move until after the World Cup. Maybe that's selfish, but it's like if you want to make the World Cup, Klinsmann says he wants to keep playing. So why go to a new situation and have to fight for your time when you know you have a more or less guaranteed spot, and you have a coach who's going to bench you if you're not playing up to your level anyways. So, I don't think either one of them is going to move until after the World Cup. But I mean, Palmer Brown is a kid who I think will make the jump. It's just I don't think he's going to be making the jump here in the very near future. He's just going to be getting time. Maybe next year or the year after, he'll get some minutes in Open Cup or other situations where we can throw out more of a reserve lineup.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I do agree with you there. I think that's probably what's going to happen. But I will say this, though, is that you're going to have a lot of rest now, obviously, and you'll be hosting Houston I believe on Saturday, November the 23rd, but just out of curiosity, you know, both sides will be very well rested. Do you see Kansas City pulling out of victory in regulation, or do you think maybe we're going to have extra time coming in here?
I think unless one of the two teams scores early, I think we're gonna be in for extra time in this game. Just again, as we talked about earlier, it's the way the teams play, and the longer this the second leg goes scoreless, the more conservative both sides are going to play. Kinnear, just because that's his style in the playoffs, and Vermes because he wants to get over that hump, so he's going to want to limit mistakes, basically. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, especially I'll say this for Kansas City. I think they're a strong starting team, but there have been times late in the games in the second halves where I've seen them lose steam. I mean, Dom Dwyer has been great coming off the bench, but, you know, you can't really rely on Dom so much when you've really got to try and, you know, whoever's been starting the match to try and help out as much as they can.
No, absolutely. We need Baylor to step up and, one, get on the field, but, two, earn the D contract. I mean, he did it against New England, and now we need him to step up here and get us in the MLS Cup final.
Yeah, absolutely, because, well, let me think here for a second here. You finished second overall in the Supporters Shield standings, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so then if you did advance, you would be hosting the Western Conference winner, with which it could be Salt Lake or it could be Portland, depending on what happens in that game. But still, though, you just got to say that this has really been one of those how would you describe the finish of this season? Because obviously we haven't had anything this crazy or probably this strong in a very long time. Probably ever since the Shield was ever created.
No, the run into the end of the season it's been incredibly exciting. I mean, I think I mentioned it to you previously, the whole it made me want the last games to all be played at the same time. You know what I mean? Like,
uh-huh.
even though you guys ended up blowing out Chicago, how much more intense could it have been if your game and our game kicked off at the same time, and you see us going ahead while you guys are behind? That just changes the whole dynamic of the game, period, for you guys, because you're like, oh, we need to step on the gas. They're now ahead of us. We got to get a goal. We got to get moving. So I mean, it's been the entire end of the season run has been just absolutely fantastic. And I mean, save for the KC Houston game, the playoffs have lived up to the same expectations.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you. I definitely agree with what you're saying. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would definitely sign up for Major League Soccer to have everything done on that, like, last day of the regular season instead of everything, like, not everything, but, like, you know, half on Saturday and the other half on Sunday. But I definitely would sign up for all games. Fine, we'll have odd number of teams again next year. But I definitely would sign up to see all the regular season games finishing up on the last day of the regular season on that Sunday. I think it would be fantastic. It all depends on what the league is going to do and you know, what will the Board of Governors do, or at least all the owners come together in a league meeting and say, let's change it up.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. But, no, as you said, the run-in's been just fantastic. I just hope that the second leg in Kansas City gives us some excitement, or at least some something enjoyable, at least for me. Screw everybody else. If it's boring and we win 1-0, you know what? We've done it before, and I'm happy to do it again.
Yep, I definitely hear you. All right, CUNY, listen, good luck in 2 weeks, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
All right, that's Mike CUNY from Down the Byline blog, Sporting Kansas City blog, as we get ready for some more excitement here in these playoffs. We're going to take a break from the playoffs in MLS, because we had a second division championship match this past Saturday as well in the NASL, as the New York Cosmos took on the Atlanta Silverbacks. And hopefully joining us very soon will be, he's here right on time, my good friend Neil Morris of The Independent down in Cary, Durham, and Raleigh, North Carolina, who was in attendance for the championship game down at Silverbacks Park. And Neil, you know, I got to say, and I got to give credit to both teams, that was an exciting final in the NASL Soccer Bowl Championship.
Yeah, it was. It was an exciting environment. It was a packed at Silverbacks Park in Atlanta. You know, the Cos have been on a run the entire fall season since they began play. So you know they would come fired up, and they had a huge contingent of traveling fans who filled up an entire section or a section and a half there at the park. You know, Atlanta was the question mark for some because they, after playing a very gritty spring season, they had fallen on difficult times in the fall, and you know, there was some question of whether they would be able to, you know, my phrase that I like to use was flip the switch, and it's something that I had asked manager Brian Haynes about a couple of weeks ago when he was in Carolina and they lost by a pretty hefty margin to the Railhawks. And at the time, you know, Haynes was a little despondent about his inability to motivate his team for this fall season, knowing that they already had a soccer bowl a berth clinched. But you know, I thought that Atlanta came out and played in many ways like the team that won the spring. It's just they were playing a very tactically and technically superior team who was very much in form in the Cosmos. So it was exciting. It was close. There wasn't much between the two clubs other than a tremendous goal by Marco Senna, and that ended up being the championship winner.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about Atlanta's keeper in Nasco, and I got to say, he looked fantastic all game long. Obviously, the goal by Senna is the only one that beat him, but still, Nasco looked to be in form. He looked strong. He was very sharp in his decision making for keeping the ball out of his net. I thought the Silverbacks were going to steal one with the way he was tending net right there.
Yeah, and he's been doing that for a while now. And you know, Atlanta had given up a lot of goals the last few games, and I guess Nasco did something that while Farinish with the Cosmos won the Golden Glove Award for having the lowest goals against average. Nasco was actually the one voted by the coaches around the league to the NLB. So Nasco's abilities, and again, that game at Wake Med Park a few weeks ago where the Railhawks hung three goals on Atlanta. Actually, I'm sorry, they hung four goals on them, beat them 4-0. And we all came away thinking it was one of the best goalkeeping efforts we had seen from a team that gave up four goals in a game. And, yeah, after Atlanta's initial push against New York the other night, once they sort of tired out or once the Cosmos figured out and settled things down a bit, they started making inroads into the box, and Nasco is the one that kept Atlanta in the game. And frankly, other than again that goal that no one could do anything about, including Joe Nasco, it seemed for the life of me that game was headed towards extra time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I felt it was going to go into extra time, and it was really an exciting game from start to finish. What was it like meeting or at least being around some of the, I would say, I know Shep Messing, who does Red Bull games on MSG Network, as well as the former Cosmos keeper. What was it like to, like, you know, talk with him probably before or during halftime of the night, or did you get a chance to speak to him?
No, I didn't see Shep. I didn't see him during the weekend. There was a whole panoply of soccer movers and shakers there. This, considering it was a Division II championship weekend, there was a fair amount of star wattage there, which was a direct consequence of the fact that the league had months to plan this event because of the change in the split season format and the spring season winner being given the right to host the Soccer Bowl. You know, one of the sort of the underlying advantages to that format that I had been talking about all season was the fact that it would give the league a chance to be able to plan a weekend like this and get people to a Division II championship weekend that you probably had never seen at one and certainly wouldn't be able to schedule with a week or two notice. I mean, obviously, it's not the same as the MLS Cup where everybody kind of comes out and shows up. It's not that. But, you know, you had some folks who are involved with NASL clubs or rumored to be involved with NASL clubs. You had officials from U.S. Soccer there, from, you know, Secretary General Dan Flynn to President Sunil Gulati at the trophy presentation at the game. You know, I don't remember the last time the president of U.S. Soccer was at a Division II championship match. And maybe it's happened and I don't remember it, but that's unusual. And then to have someone like Dan Flynn at your awards ceremony the night before, you know, obviously you've got people who are associated in some way with the league who are there, like, you know obviously Eric Winalda and John Harkes and you know, Peter Wild is there, and all the presidents and the managers, and, you know, everyone was there, and it was an interesting gathering of people who are involved in the Division II makeup, and folks that are excited about what they're doing, and that would not have been possible without the ability to plan it ahead of time, like they were able to do because of this change in the regular season format.
Yeah, definitely, and a lot of excitement with both the split seasons. I know a lot of people won't be happy with next year's schedule, obviously, because they're gonna take the break for the World Cup, but 10 games only in the spring season, I will agree it's not enough and there should be more. But I want to move forward here and talk about basically there's a lot of people talking about, and mostly in the New York area, that, you know how New Yorkers like to have a nice war of words. They like to mince around everything, get a little heated as they like. Some are, not trying to take away the Cosmos championship, but there are some that feel, you know, the Cosmos only went in for one half season, where you have the rest of these teams playing two full, both spring and fall. Some people will say, you know, that shouldn't have counted. How do you feel about that?
Well, the first thing I'll say is what was interesting in being at the Soccer Bowl events throughout the weekend and in the weeks leading up to the game is that when you talk to especially other coaches around the league, they barely mask their contempt for the fact that the Cosmos were allowed to be in the championship game. You would think that coaches would be a little play their cards a little closer to the vest and be a little more diplomatic, but they barely hide their contempt for it. I in one of my write-ups, I talked about Brian Haynes of Atlanta, who won Coach of the Year, at the awards ceremony Friday night, got up and sort of gave his normal thank yous to his team and the owner and, everyone associated with the Silverbacks. And then right in the middle of his acceptance speech, started talking about how he hoped that the performance that they gave, that his team would give the next night would honor or do right by folks like Colin Clark and Ricky Hill and teams like Carolina and Tampa, who had great seasons and probably deserved to be there. And then he looked over at the Cosmos, and then he looked at the Cosmos and said, and the Cosmos did what they had to do to get here, and I respect them for that. It was just, it was like an elephant in the room, and it was amazing to me to just see the palpable feeling that they had, one that has been echoed by fans across the league on social media and whatnot. I guess where I come out on it is this. You know, people have been preaching all along. I mean, Bill Peterson was preaching this before the regular season, spring season even started, that he was trying to say that the Cosmos had a disadvantage because they would only have one shot to get in the Soccer Bowl and wouldn't be able to host it. And I can understand that, but on the other hand, it enabled the Cosmos to come out with a head of steam, channel their resources to just half season. They wouldn't have to worry about injuries and as much of an ebb and flow of the season. And I do believe that those are advantages. After having watched that team play multiple times, both against Carolina and, you know, I've seen them play twice in person, and I've seen them on television and the internet several times. I guess sort of my reservations about the way that they got to where they got to are tempered a bit by the fact that they're just good. and I've come to the conclusion that if they had played the entire season, they probably would have won the spring and the fall, unless they slacked up in the fall like Atlanta did. And no one wants to hear this, but you know, they're a talented, well-coached bunch. And after having seen them, you know, they didn't steamroll teams, but sometimes they did, and then other times they just knew how to grind out victories, both at home and they only lost one game and out of 14, or actually 15 if you count the Soccer Bowl. Since coming in August, they lost once, and that was to Carolina at Wake Med Park, and then they got revenge for that, you know, a month or so later by taking the Railhawks apart 4-0. So they're just a good team. So all the hand wringing about the way that they got there, while I understand, you know, after having looked at this team, I can't sit there and say, well, they were given a gift. They went out and won their way in.
Yeah, they really did. Let me ask you this question. This will be towards Carolina, of course. Railhawks winning the Woosnam Trophy, of course, named after the former original commissioner of the NASL back in those good old days. Of course, he recently passed away. But how do you feel about the Railhawks winning the Woosnam Trophy for a basically combined regular season record for that achievement?
The adjective I use is the same one that everybody associated with the team has used about it, is bittersweet. I know that the team and the supporters want to put a lot of emphasis on this cup. And it is a testament to the fact that Carolina was very consistent throughout the year. So, you know, maybe they'll get a trophy that they can put in their new trophy case there in the hallway down at Wake Med Park. But I'm going to tell you, I think there was some satisfaction of being able to win out and earn that overall most points achievement, which earned them the Woosnam Cup. But that the failure to win the spring season after having it on their racket, particularly that June 29th match at home against Atlanta, where a win would have clinched the spring season, and they ended up drawing, and then they lost to San Antonio 4 days later, and Atlanta snuck through to win the spring. That, and I talked about this on your fall season preview show, and some people, and I heard back from some of the Carolina people indirectly that you know, after Carolina started out fast in the fall, they thought that they had disproven my concern that they wouldn't get over that failure to clinch the spring. Well,
right.
I think I was right because when the team started to fail a bit, especially on the road in the fall, it seemed as if every time Carolina would do something good and you'd ask Colin Clark about it or someone else, the response would be, yeah, if we had just done that in the spring, we'd be in the Soccer Bowl. They never got over that. It stuck in their craw the entire fall season. And the fact that they knew they had it, they had a home game where they had not failed to win a game the entire season, I think, you know, the Railhawks, you got to remember, I guess, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, the Railhawks, when Martin Rennie was there, started out like gangbusters, ended up winning the regular season by a couple of points after they swooned a bit late in the season. They celebrated by giving themselves an unofficial regular season championship, and then they lost in the playoffs. And I think that was the year Minnesota won. So the Carolina fans had been here before. They won regular season crowns, if you want to call it that, and then failed to put the final stamp to get the trophy. And so,
right,
I think if what had happened back in 2011, I think it was, had not happened when the team started out so well and had the most points in the regular season and then lost in the playoffs, you know, maybe everybody in Carolina would feel a little better about finishing with the most overall points this year. But that memory plus the way it happened this year is just something that still sticks in their craw.
I bet it is. Let me tell you something, Neil. Thank you very much for your time. I always appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you very much, and definitely we'll talk to you when next season's spring season preview show comes along the way. So listen, thanks a lot. And enjoy the time off.
No problem, and look forward to doing it again in about 4 or 5 months.
Absolutely. And that's Neil Morris from The Independent down in Cary, Raleigh, and Durham, North Carolina, talking about that Soccer Bowl final. We go back into the MLS Cup playoffs to a gentleman who is very, very excited, very, very happy because Real Salt Lake put a hurting on the Portland Timbers with a 4-2 aggregate lead. Of course, it's Mr. Denzel Esslinger. And I have to say that following your tweets, you weren't happy with some of the prognosticators that Portland was going to come into the Rio Tinto Stadium and run roughshod all over RSL, where, in fact, the truth is it was the other way around.
Well, you know, and it's interesting – because a lot of the national media and a lot of the MLS editors, they all like RSL, but they look at the record of Portland, you know, going the last 10 matches without a loss, and they're, you know, I love the phrase, the juggernaut. Well, the problem is the match before their 10-game unbeaten streak was a 4-2 loss at Rio Tinto Stadium, and one of their last matches of the season was a 0-0 draw with RSL. This is a club that historically in Portland has one victory over RSL, and that one victory came 3 days after the Champions League final, that heartbreaker at Rio Tinto against Monterrey. That's the only time since joining MLS that Portland's ever beat RSL. So when I look at the MLS editors picking the match and 3 out of 11 pick RSL to win, I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, what logic can you use to think that Portland is going to win, you know, over RSL in this match, given, you know, the history between these two clubs and the way the two clubs match up? You can't compare what Portland did against Seattle, just like you can't compare what RSL did against LA. You have to look at the head-to-head matchups, and there were 4 this year before Sunday night. Both the matches at Rio Tinto were won by RSL, that's the Open Cup semifinal, and then the regular MLS match, and both matches in Portland were draws. So how you can look at the matchups
Know some of the injuries. Yeah, Alvaro Sabarrio was hurt. Sabarrio only played, what, 16, 17 games for RSL all year? And I think we were the second leading scoring team in the league. So, yeah, it's not like we drop off a lot when we lose any single player.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because I remember Salt Lake in the semifinals of the Open Cup this year. And, I mean, you, not just you, but Salt Lake had the game well in hand. I mean, granted, they pulled one back, Portland, but you had a feeling, you know, they weren't going to threaten and they weren't going to force extra time. So even I have to admit I was a little bit perplexed that all of a sudden here comes all the, you know, everything's coming, you know, Portland's way by the editors of all these different sites, even in MLS saying, here come the Timbers, when it's really Salt Lake that, you know, you got to worry about.
Well, you know, and I give them a little bit of slack because the reality is, you know, if you look at national TV coverage, most of the as I call them, the talking heads, just like we do with the regular media, most of the soccer talking heads have seen a lot more of Portland than they have of RSL this year. RSL mm-hmm. struggled a little bit during the end of the season. Let's face facts. Portland played really well against Seattle in the quarter or the semifinal. The problem is, look at what Seattle had done for the last 2 months. It's not as if they were heading into the playoffs with any type of momentum. You know, an RSL coming off of the beating the Galaxy twice in the same match, thank you, Baltimore Toledo, you know, are coming in with some good momentum. Hey, come on. Yep. Nobody knows why that goal was pulled out. You know, there's more contact on every set piece than what he used as a logic, you know, to pull a goal out that would have ended that in regulation and not forced RSL to go an extra 30 minutes. So the thing that, yeah. that I loved about Sunday's match is Portland came out with good energy. They got the goal from Will Johnson, you know, and RSL looked, you know, and I've heard the TV announcer say it, and you could see it on the sideline. They all just kind of took a second, gathered themselves, and then the match changed. You know, it was like watching a different team for the first 15 minutes and for the rest of the match. And the ability to do that, to recover from giving up an early goal at home, is crucial, you know. And, man, in stoppage time, you hate to give up a goal, you know, and drop back to just a two-goal lead. But what a beautiful goal by, what is his name, Piquion? I mean, he got up over Borchers and he headed that ball perfectly, and it was a great cross. You know, Portland's a darn good team, you know, and yeah. the issue I think people forget is RSL just matches up really well, position for position with them, and we talked about that, you know, before the match on Sunday, the last time we talked. You know, you got two of the best keepers in the league. You got two of the best midfields in the league. You've got solid, you know, good quality, you know, defensive mid, or D mids on each side. You've got decent forwards, and I think the advantage RSL gets is depth. You know, so Chris Wingert goes off hurt in the 33rd minute. In comes Lavelle Palmer, former Timber, who and the team doesn't miss a beat. You know, in fact, 2 minutes later, they're scoring a goal, you know, to make it level. And it's just the matchups favor RSL when these two teams meet. You know, and so I'm sure every expert out there is going to pick Portland to win, you know, in a couple of weeks when we're up in Portland. But I tell you what, mm-hmm. don't be surprised. They're gonna have to push. And when they have to push like that, chances are going to come. And when you've got the speed of Robbie Finley, Jao Plata, Olmes Garcia, and just the work rate of a, you know, a kid like a Devin Sandoval who just stepped up the whole match and caused havoc. Don't be surprised if RSL doesn't get a draw or win that match because Portland is going to have to be desperate. And RSL doesn't have to be. All RSL have to do is play their game, possess the ball, you know, and get some shots on goal. And they'll create those chances, and it'll be a great chance for Nick Raimondo to come up big like he has all year long. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, it definitely will be. I got to say, though, that was a great goal by Sandoval. Is it just me, or does he look like the Spanish version of Zlatan Ibrahimovic? Because
you know, there here in Salt Lake, there are a lot of Princess Bride references when it comes to Devin Sandoval, and there's you've not seen the posters, and he loves it. It's funny, but you know, here's a kid, you know, that gets picked late in the MLS draft, and to be honest, I think RSL sandbagged a lot of people on him. You know, he was at the combine. But RSL saw him the summer before when, you know, he came out to an RSL camp at Casa Grande. And so the team already knew him. The team had already scouted him, seen how he played, found out what kind of player he was, because that is such a key thing here, is not only their ability on the pitch, but what type of a player they are in the locker room and how they are off the pitch. You know, and so getting to know him. You can go back, the same thing with the Sebastian Velasquez. You know, everybody else, he flies under the radar. RSL spent some time with him before, took him in the draft, you know, and he's playing like gangbusters. You know, I thought he, given the fact that he played 120 minutes on Thursday, I thought he was incredibly high energy, incredibly effective on Sunday night as well. So it's like we said the last time we talked, you can take a piece out of RSL, and the depth is so great here that somebody just pops right in and does good things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Jason Christ, Garth Lagerwey, I mean, they just don't miss a beat with what they're doing with RSL. I mean, how many times you've heard before the season got started, they shed Olave, Espíndola, Johnson off the club, and then they bring in these players that, you know, probably is more – noticeable for you and everyone else in Salt Lake and not, you know, outside of the area. And here they are, and they just made such a great transition, and here they are knocking on the door on another MLS Cup final, possibility of being either on the road in Kansas City, or if it's if Houston does the impossible again, that Houston's coming to Rio Tinto.
I'd love to see it. You know, it's funny because everybody talks about losing Espíndola, losing Olave, and losing Will Johnson. And each one of them, I thought, has stepped up incredibly well, which I think is just a testament to how good RSL was. But, you know, one of the players, you know, one of the things that people miss, Johnny Steele, 28 matches last year for RSL, goes to New York and is a critical part of what the Red Bulls did. You know, and RSL not only lost those guys, but every other forward that we had on our roster was gone. You know, so when we started the season, it's Alvaro Sabarillo. We had to trade Portland to get the rights to Robbie Finley. Robbie Finley comes back, we get him. You know, however we worked the Joel Plata deal, I'm so glad that he came back. You know, and to Garth and Jason's credit and Andy Williams, finding an Omas Garcia, you know, and then finding a Devin Sandoval in the draft, you know, it's just to have a team that had one forward return, lost you know, three guys who had played in the All-Star game, you know, it really is a testament to how they've built the depth. So a guy like Luis Gil, you know, who keeps progressing and keeps progressing and keeps progressing, and a Sebastian Velasquez. So when you know, a guy who's having a career year and Ned Grabovoi goes down with an injury, Sebastian comes in and the team, again, doesn't miss a beat. You know, Chris Schuler hurt most of the season. So, you know, we've had a young guy in Carlos Salcedo play a lot. We went out, picked up Brandon McDonald in case we needed him. We had Kwame Watson-Cerebo who got hurt. You know, and here the end of the season, Chris Schuler gets healthy again, and in two matches, he has just forced himself as a presence. Well, actually, in all three playoff matches, if you think about it, because, you know, like the LA series, Keenan Donovan, it wasn't that they were off. Schuler and Borchers and the rest of the defense did a great job in making it where they weren't dangerous enough You know, and thankfully in that first game, Nick made some huge saves, and they blew some opportunities. But in that second game, LA had more shots, more possession, you know, more shots on goal than RSL, but nothing that was so troublesome that we weren't able to pick up that win. You know, and then you see against Portland, who's got some incredible speed, they've got some really good players, but they were just always frustrated that they really didn't get, you know, many good opportunities to create other than the set piece and then that late, you know, incredible header.
Yeah, absolutely. Denzel, thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate it. And enjoy the break and good luck on in 2 weeks on Sunday.
It's going to be fun.
It will be. Thank you very much. Denzel Eschlinger joining me over in RSL and a lot of fun things going on. Now, ladies and gentlemen, John Jagu, he could not come on live tonight. He had to take care of something. And here he is talking about what Mexico needs to do against New Zealand in this World Cup qualifying intercontinental playoffs. Here it is.
And this is Fire Internet American Soccer Show. And once again, the man that knows everything that goes on down in Mexico, the national team as well as Liga MX, it is Mr. John Jagu from Big Soccer. John, thanks for joining me again.
Good evening, Daniel. How are you?
Very good. Thank you very much. And, John, this is it now. The two extra games for Mexico as the USA helps Mexico advance into the intercontinental playoffs against New Zealand. What is the mood from where you've heard is going on in the Azteca?
Well, I think that actually there's a bit of renewed confidence of from what I've read and heard and seen about the team. I think that what's becoming apparent is that this New Zealand side that's coming down is not necessarily the same side that has such a great World Cup in South Africa. You know, they didn't lose the game; they didn't make it to the next round, but they had three ties. Very defensive team, which of course is what's been causing Mexico problems. The positive problems in the Hex. New Zealand, unfortunately, lost their skipper last week, so they will be without him. They are in Mexico City now. The game's on tomorrow at 2:30 Central, and, you know, we'll see what happens. I know that the coach, Miguel Herrera, took a huge gamble in not bringing his best, on paper, what would be Mexico's best players. He's opted instead to use more than a half a dozen players from his team that he did, from which he came from, which was Club America. Sprinkle in a few players from some other teams. Rafa Marquez was brought back to short defense, which, you know, when you have to bring back a guy in his 30s to shore up not just defense but leadership, and obviously it shows that the Mexico have been in big trouble throughout the entire Hex. There'll be no Chicharito, no Gio Dos Santos, obviously no Carlos Vela. There also won't be Andres Guardado or Hector Moreno, who's had a pretty decent year playing for Espanyol in Barcelona. And, Herrera's putting all his chips on the table. He's going to make the gamble that the best way to play a team like New Zealand in Mexico City is to use the team that plays in Mexico City on a regular basis, which is Club America. And, we'll see what happens then.
You know, is this a message being sent by Herrera against players like Chicharito, Giovanni Dos Santos, Guardado, and others, saying, I would rather use players from the main league and not use you that plays in Europe?
Well, I don't think it is because, to his credit, and I know that, everyone is, especially in Mexico, any decision is looked at. He brings them in and say, what on earth are you bringing these guys in for? They're terrible. They had a terrible Hex. He then brings them in and say, what on earth are you not bringing these guys in for? They're your best players. So, he was either damned if he did or damned if he didn't. I think that the approach that he's taken, I totally understand it. I may not necessarily agree with it as much, just because I think that, I'm perfectly fine with him playing who he's playing as far as starting 11, but if you need a guy that, if you need to get some goals, who would you rather have come off the bench? I've never played 1 minute of international soccer, or a guy like Javier Fernandez. The same with Gio Dos Santos, who actually turned out got injured last week, so he wouldn't have been available anyway, but that's kind of beside the point.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's definitely a huge gamble. I mean, he's saying that, you know, I'm confident in the guys that I have. I will say that he does. I think that any coach in the world would be happy to have a guy like Oribe Peralta, who's obviously going to be his starting striker and going to be the guy that that most of the offense will not necessarily flow through, but hopefully culminate with. You know, Peralta's, you know, we've talked about him for the past couple of years. I mean, the guy's just, you know, he's just a great player. And he can score, you know, inside the area, outside the area, with the header, with his feet. He's just a good guy. Good guy to have around. He's, you know, as much as that bicycle kick goal got Mexico into this round of the hex, I mean, Peralta, you know, has scored his last three games in the hex. So he's definitely a guy to build your offense around. And you know, again, we'll see what happens. I think that the midfield has improved dramatically with the inclusion of Herrera's own holding midfielder, Galeno, from Carlos Medina. He is flanking him with two of the players from León in Carlos Peña, who's really, I think, is poised to be a breakout star, and Luis Montes, a guy who may not be as big as some of the other ones, but it just has, you know, just your typical Mexican midfielder, has great vision, you know, kind of a small guy, has great vision, has a lethal left foot, you know, something that Mexico has been lacking in the hex or outside shots or players, you know, that he's capable of and have the confidence to take him. And the defense is going to be an issue, especially on time, is they've got guys that are, you know, in their 30s and old and slow, and, you know, they teams in the hexagonal showed that Mexico is definitely vulnerable on the back. They're going to play with a line of five, so actually they have three central defenders. Rafa Marquez will probably play in front of the other two, which right now it looks like it's going to be the guys who do it for Blue America, and Massa Rodriguez and Juan Carlos Valenzuela. Definitely not the best options that you have, but, you know, again, you know, the coach is taking the gamble that, you know, New Zealand's had to travel to get here. We're going to play them at 2:30. The weather's not going to be a factor because it's going to be in the 60s with a chance of rain. So it's not going to be people to think that Mexico City is some sort of tropical jungle. I think we can go ahead and pick out the rest right there, the hot months in Mexico, April and May. Not even in the summer is it ever going to get terribly hot. But, you know, there is going to be the smog factor, the altitude, obviously, the heat factor, and the New Zealand players have never really played in front of what's expected to be a solid crowd. There will be 100,000 people there, and I think that the big difference between this group and what had happened with the Hex is that, you know, Miguel Herrera, for the things that he does well, I think that one of the things he does well is that he takes the pressure off his players, which is something that Chepo de la Torre could not do. In fact, he actually took more pressure on his players because, you know, he was as, you know, as tight of a drum during the game. And, you know, I always said that the players were actually the coach, and they played tight because he was tight. You know, he obviously had no confidence, for better or for worse, in his players. I'm not sure why that was. He just didn't seem like he had this expectation that they were going to do something when they didn't. Instead of, you know, helping them do it, he would yell at him, and obviously it didn't work. But that is kind of the opposite. You know, he's definitely a player's coach, the kind of guy that, you know, has already gone in and kind of changed the atmosphere a little bit. You know, whether it works or not, we'll, you know, we will definitely see. And it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I think that, you know, just like we've talked about this, you know, for the past few months, Mexico to get the early goal, then I think that the, you know, I think it's going to be only a matter of time before New Zealand cracks, and you know, Mexico could maybe walk away with a comfortable 3 or 4 goal win if they can get, you know, if they can get some of those early attacks to be fruitful. Otherwise, obviously, the longer that the game remains scoreless, the more the Kiwis are going to have the advantage, and that pressure is going to start seeping in, and we're going to see if this team can. Can handle that, because obviously the folks that played in Mexico for Mexico in the Hex over the past few months could not handle that pressure. They let Leeds at home, and in the last two games they had at home, they let Leeds get away. They could not close the door against those teams when those teams were so obviously playing to ensure that they weren't going to get take a 3 or 4 goal beat down. Mexico, you know, in both cases, for whatever reason, called off the dogs. I don't think that Herrera is going to do that. I think that he understands very well that if Mexico can walk away with a multiple goal lead, I think it's going to make them have a very comfortable game in Wellington, which will be played, early Wednesday morning for us next week. And if that's the case, then I think the Mexico will make it to the World Cup. But if Mexico only walks away with a 1-0, you know, even a 2-0 game, then I think that they're going to start to worry a little bit more. And it's going to be a very uncomfortable game next week in New Zealand, where I wouldn't surprise me at all, actually, because of the fact that the travel won't be as bad for the Europeans, if Herrera goes ahead and calls in some of those guys. And I think he'll do it anyway, especially if they have a lead, just so we can see what they have, because, you know, the chances are about 50-50 that if Herrera does take him to the World Cup, that he'll be the World Cup coach, although I have a feeling that they're going to choose Carlos Bielsa, the Argentine that did so well with Chile in the last World Cup.
Well, we'll see what happens there. But if I can ask this question, if Mexico does qualify through the playoff or does not qualify through the playoff, whose head do you think should be rolling right now, or whose heads do you think should be rolling right now for allowing this, I guess I can say it, this debacle, because Mexico should have probably already been qualified by now? Who do you think?
Yeah, I think that obviously it starts from the top down, but I think that you know, both the, you know, the administrators obviously should share the blame. You know, the coaching was terrible. I mean, it was absolutely horrific for the first 6 or 7 games of the Heck, and it really didn't get better. And I feel that Vucevic was wrongly fired. I don't necessarily think that he may have been the right guy for the job at the time, but I do think that you know, given a month to prepare, you know, I think that he would have been fine against New Zealand. So, you know, I have all the faith in Herrera, but I mean, obviously, you know, the coaching was, especially with Chepo, was really subpar. And, of course, you know, the players didn't play well either. I mean, Giovanni only had one assist in those games in the Hex. Javier Hernandez only scored a couple of goals in the Hex. I mean, Mexico didn't score that many goals anyway. But, you know, the fact that Mexico would go an entire half at the Azteca without a shot on goal, I think speaks more to coaching than anything else. I mean, Mexico was playing scared. I mean, they were playing how opponents would normally play at the Azteca, and they were the home team. And that, to me, is a reflection of the coaching. For whatever reason, instead of trying to step on people's necks at the second, which is what you're supposed to do when you have that kind of home field advantage, they were thinking that we'll just try and squeeze by with a 1-0 game. that doesn't work. And I'm not saying it's just for Mexico. I think it should be for any World Cup team at home. They play in a home game. I mean, you're at home. You try and do what you do best and make the other team stop you, and Mexico didn't do that at all.
Absolutely.
So I think that as far as, you know, sharing the blame, I think that all three groups are going to share the blame. I mean, they're all three were not good. They had a very poor campaign, as evidenced by the fact that they're now having to fight through with this playoff against New Zealand just to make it to the World Cup.
Absolutely. John, good luck with Mexico tomorrow night in the first leg, and I will talk to you soon, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel, and hope your Jets have another good week.
I hope so, too. Thanks, John.
Sure.
And that's John Jagu from Big Soccer, covers the Mexican national team and Liga MX sides, writes some very good articles about what goes on with everything Mexican football. Want to thank my guests for tonight, of course, Warren Jones, Mike Kuhn, Denzel Esslinger, Neil Morris of The Independent, and just recently John Jagu for the taped conversation. Tomorrow, Mexico hosting New Zealand at the Azteca, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 Central on ESPN, and of course other wonderful playoff games happening tonight and into next Wednesday. Also, don't forget this Friday, USA at Scotland at 3:00 Eastern on ESPN2. Post-game show will be at 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific, as I'll probably either be on my own or I'll probably have a special guest helping me out a little bit. Other than that, thank you very much for listening tonight. This has been the Feuersteins FireNet Soccer Show, episode number 170. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you so much for listening tonight. And as always, please, I beg of you, please, please enjoy your football. I thank you very much for listening tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show, and catch you this Friday evening at 5:30. Bye-bye for now.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard-to-recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.